WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
Terry! Terry!
The same way they called Andy the night I lost him. Edie, be careful! Edie, be careful!
That's a scene from On the Waterfront in which Edie, played by Eva Marie Saint, calls after Terry, played by Marlon Brando, as he walks into a trap. Saint's other best-known films are Alfred Hitchcock's comic thriller North by Northwest, John Frankenheimer's family drama All Fall Down, and Exodus about the founding of Israel. On TV, Saint played Sybil Shepherd's mother in the series Moonlighting. Eva Marie Saint stars in a new CBS TV movie this Sunday night called Papa's Angels. Set in Appalachia in the 1930s, the story is about how a family survives after the young wife and mother dies of tuberculosis. When the mother first gets sick, she hides her symptoms from her family. In this scene, her mother-in-law, played by Eva Marie Saint, confronts her with a bloody handkerchief she found while doing the laundry. The young mother, played by Cynthia Nixon, tries to cover up the truth.
Alvin had a bloody nose. Made me mad to ruin a good embroidered handkerchief, but we were in church, so what can you do?
What about this one? How long the bloody nose go on?
Well, you know our children. Somebody's always bleeding. I'm just grateful when bones aren't broken.
Now I know why you and my son get along so good. You're both born liars.
I'm a busy woman. I got more to do than run to a doctor about a bloody nose.
Except it's not a bloody nose, is it? I'm not going to tell you what to do. You won't listen to me any more than Becca will listen to you. But when you go in there, I want you to look at these children and tell me you think my son can raise them without you.
Eva Marie Saint won an Academy Award for her first film, which was On the Waterfront. I asked her how she got the part.
I had been doing many, 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 many live shows on television. And at one point, I did Trip to Bountiful, the Horton Foote play. First it was a television, then he rewrote it as a play with Lillian Gish. And Kazan saw me in that part. Martin Juro, my agent, sent Kazan to see me in that, and he saw it and thought of me as the young virginal blonde and On the Waterfront. And I didn't read for it. I improvised with Marlon Brando. And it was an interesting improvisation because to this day, I don't know what he told Marlon. But he did tell me that I was at home and a young man was coming to visit my sister who was not at home. So my job was to keep him out of that house. Don't let him in the door. Well, I don't know what happened, but he went in the door. He came in the living room. We were dancing. We were laughing. I was crying. He was taking my skirt and whoosh, whipping it around, and the sparks flew, and Kazan saw that, and suddenly I was on the waterfront.
Were you used to improvising?
Oh, yes. I was from the Actor's Studio. I'd been studying there. I was there about 7 years, and all total, and I had seen Marlon there, but I'd never worked with him. I actually worked with Lee Strasberg, and of course Kazan was there, too.
Had you seen Brando in anything before starring with him?
Yes, I'd seen his movies, and I'm never in awe of another actor because it's all the same business. Some actors are fine actors, some not quite fine actors, good actors. I'm never in awe of anyone in our profession. I'm in awe of musicians or painters, but I was impressed, and he was adorable, and he was a prince, and he knew it was my first film. It was very cold in Hoboken.
That's where you shot it?
On the waterfront. In Hoboken, on the waterfront right there. And it was very cold. And he was always giving me a jacket to put over my shoulders. And I was skiing at the time. So underneath my my virginal navy blue dress. I had red long johns on, so when the morale was low, I threw up my dress and start doing the can-can for all the longshoremen.
That'd be very out of character for your character in the movie.
True, I'm glad. I don't think Kazan saw me because he liked everyone to stay in character.
Oh, that's funny.
But that got a few laughs. But he was very, very kind, Marlon. We rehearsed constantly, which is what you do on a Kazan film.
Right. Now, in the movie, you have this, like, radiant, pure beauty, but in most of the scenes, you're wearing real schmatas. You're wearing this big drab woolen coat and a kerchief around your head. And
I still have that kerchief.
Do you really?
I always say one, I should put it on eBay, right? No, sorry. I usually have one thing from each film, and I have it in a little cellophane bag with a photo of me and Marlon, and there I have the kerchief. I'm holding the kerchief. And actually, it was my kerchief, and you know what it was? It's little squares of Amish carriage, little dark print of a Amish carriage, and it's repeated through the whole little scarf.
You know, often in movies, you know, the beautiful young leading lady is quite glamorous, and you're so unglamorously dressed in this. Did it affect how you felt in the role to be wearing this, like, drab coat and the shmata on your head?
No, when I was making rounds in New York, and the things that I played on live television were not very glamorous. I think you're thinking of North by Northwest. I wasn't really glamorous until mm-hmm. Hitch saw me as a sexy spy lady. And I remember saying to my husband, my God, he sees me as a sexy spy lady. And my husband said, well, so do I. So that made two of them. But the only thing is it was navy blue, and for some reason I never, ever wear navy blue. I think I was tired of that dress by the time it was over. Everything was navy. The dress was navy. The coat was navy. And in those days, we did wear those kerchiefs over our head on windy days and cold windy days in New York.
Mm-hmm.
In the 50s, we wore them. They were very practical, actually. So I didn't feel that I wasn't smartly dressed at all. That navy blue with a little collar was a pretty cute dress. I did feel embarrassed in the slip, I must say.
We'll get to that.
We'll get to that.
Now, in this scene from On the Waterfront, you've decided not to see the Brando character anymore. But he's knocking on your door, and you're telling him to stay away. Then you lock the door and chain the door. He breaks into your apartment and finds you in bed wearing this white slip. Let's hear that scene.
Stay away from me.
Come on, please open the door, please.
Stop it. I want you to stay away from me.
I don't know what you want me to do, but I ain't gonna do it, so forget it.
I don't want you to do anything. You let your conscience tell you what to do.
Shut up about that conscience. That's all I've been hearing.
I never mentioned the word before. You just stay away from
me. Edie, you love me. I want you
didn't
to
say... say I didn't love you. I said stay away from me.
I want you to say it to me.
Stay away from me.
And that silence and then the little squeaking is them kissing passionately after she's attempted in vain to fight him off and then gives in. It's really quite a moment in the film. I mean, you look like you're almost about to faint with mm-hmm. being totally overcome by this physical feeling that's very new to you, being in mm-hmm. in his arms. Let's talk about that scene. How is that kiss staged?
How was the kiss staged? Well, we were struggling. And I was hitting his back. And I'm sure it was Kazan who said, just drop that arm at that point. And I did.
To show that you were giving in, that you were succumbing to your feelings.
It. You know, when you just hear it, it's almost like two animals, isn't it? He was very Marlon very, very strong in that. And she dropped her conscience, didn't she? He overcame her, and yet she had these strong feelings, and he broke through for both of them. She really did love him. I had trouble actually with that scene because I was in a slip, and in those days I was very modest, and I felt exposed. I'd never been in a slip on screen and on television. And the kiss and all of that, it was pretty physical. I remember just having trouble when Kazan came up to me and he just whispered the name of my husband. He just said, "Jeffrey." Well, I'm still married to Jeffrey. It's almost 50 years. And, you know, it worked. I mean, that was it. I mean, another director might have struggled with whatever, but he just, one word, and no one heard it. Marlon didn't hear it. No one heard it, and that's how he worked. And somehow, I just knew that he knew I would relax because he had met my husband. If I thought of Jeffrey, and somehow when he whispered that, I just relaxed and enjoyed it.
There's a scene in this where he's been called downstairs by some of the guys who are out to kill him, and you've chased after him, calling his name, and you find him in this narrow alley. And just as you find him and you're running down this alley to meet up with him, a big truck that's as wide as the alley is coming after him and therefore coming after you too. And there's no way you can be in the street without getting hit by this truck. So he breaks into a building and you both rush in, narrowly averting this truck. It's such a beautifully lit scene. You're kind of like in the headlights of the truck, illuminated by it, running for your lives. Were you aware of the lighting when that shot was being made?
You're never aware of the lighting, but it's interesting because when I did see it, it's almost like the hair has a halo.
Yeah,
as I remember, it was a very scary scene because it was wet. I had no idea that truck was going to be as close as it was in the scene. There was a place where we had to get out of the way, and Marlon was supposed to open the door. The door wouldn't open. He actually broke that glass. And he actually cut his hand a little bit. The designated door was not unlocked or was jammed or something. So Marlon Brando is that kind of actor. He broke the glass and we got inside just in time.
I guess you didn't have to do that scene again.
No. No. Uh-uh.
You won an Oscar for your role in On the Waterfront, and I think 4 days after winning the Oscar, you gave birth to a son.
2 days.
2 days.
Better story, right? 2 days. Yeah.
So those are two big changes in your life happening just about simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, for most people, when they get the Academy Award, they want to be at their most glamorous, and you are at your absolute most pregnant. I'm not sure if you were even able to go to the award ceremony.
Oh, yes. I was sitting there with Jeffrey, and it was in New York. Now it's all in California, but at that time, the New York contingency and the Hollywood contingency, and there was a little jealousy between Hollywood and New York, so we really didn't think there was much of a chance for Waterfront, Black and White, made in New York. But we went, and we were all there, and some of the people started winning Oscars. And my dear husband said, "Now, honey, if they call your name, I want you to sit here and count to 10 and then go up." Well, I heard my name and I felt this hand on my thigh, pressing my thigh, and I'm smiling and smiling and I'm really counting to 10. And then I walked up. I didn't rush up. I walked up and accepted the Oscar and said something like, "I'm so excited. I may have the baby right here." And of course, I had it two days later.
Eva Marie Saint is my guest, and she's starring in a new movie called Papa's Angels, which will be broadcast Sunday night on CBS. Let's take a short break here, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Eva Marie Saint, and she's starring in a new movie called Papa's Angels that will be broadcast on CBS TV this Sunday night. Let's talk about a movie that you made 5 years after On the Waterfront, North by Northwest, which starred you and Cary Grant. And you play the opposite kind of woman in this, from what you played in On the Waterfront. In this, you're a very glamorous, beautiful spy working undercover, and it's your job both to seduce Cary Grant and to seduce his nemesis. Why don't we start with a scene from the movie? Cary Grant is on the run. He's been mistakenly accused of being a murderer. He's hiding out on a train. He's seated next to you in the dining car, and he doesn't know that you're a spy, and he doesn't know that you know that he isn't who he pretends to be. So
it's complicated, isn't it?
Here's the scene.
Think how lucky I am to have been seated here.
Well, luck had nothing to do with it.
Fate?
I tipped the steward $5 to seat you here if you should come in.
Is that a proposition?
I never discuss love on an empty stomach.
You've already eaten.
But you haven't.
Don't you think it's time we were introduced?
I'm Eve Kendall. I'm 26 and unmarried. Now you know everything.
Tell me, what do you do besides lure men to their doom on the 20th Century Limited?
I'm an industrial designer.
Jack Phillips, Western Sales Manager for Kingby Electronics.
No, you're not. You're Roger Thornhill of Madison Avenue, and you're wanted for murder on every front page in America. And don't be so modest.
Oops.
Oh, don't worry. I won't say a word.
How come?
I told you. It's a nice face.
Is that the only reason?
It's going to be a long night.
True.
And I don't particularly like the book I've started.
Ah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, let me think. Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
Eva Marie Saint, how did Hitchcock think of you for this very seductive role? When you were best known for playing a woman who was very chaste and plain and, well, chaste and beautiful, but shy, you know, in On the Waterfront.
I don't know. I'm glad that he did. I felt very comfortable playing the role. His set was such that everyone who was on the set, you just had the feeling of such confidence because he saw you and he didn't see anyone else. And right, you can do this. Sure, you're right. You're the sexy spy lady. He didn't give much direction, very different from Kazan. He gave external direction, things like lower your voice, don't use your hands, because I sort of use my hands a lot when I talk, and look directly into Cary Grant's eyes at all times, which was not difficult. but those were the things, and the clothes. He didn't like the clothes that were designed for me, so he took me to New York, and we went to Berghoff Goodman, and he said, anything you want. I used to tease him. I said, you were the only sugar daddy I ever had in my life. I had none before or none after. That afternoon, I felt like I had a sugar daddy. Whatever you want, Eva Marie. And so I took the black dress with the red roses. Remember that? I love that and some other things.
Let's talk about the Mount Rushmore scene where you and Cary Grant are escaping from the people who are out to get you, and you're scaling Mount Rushmore, or what I imagine was a sculpture version, a miniature version of Mount Rushmore. What were you actually climbing on?
We were climbing at, by the way, 2 weeks after I gave birth.
Oh, you're
climbing
kidding.
No. At that time, the doctors didn't want women to gain more than 21 pounds. So once you have your 9-pound baby, there's not much left. But that was at MGM in the studio, and it was very, very high. And it was, you know, it was made of artificial material to make it look like Mount Rushmore. And it was high. An actor who had trouble with heights would have had a difficult time. But I was pretty athletic in high school and college, and so I ski and all that, so I was in good shape, even though I'd had a baby, to climb that darn mountain. And I didn't have any fears. But once we started climbing and I happened to look down and I saw that the prop man was putting all these mattresses around the perimeter of Mount Rushmore, and I thought, oh my God, that's right, we could actually fall, couldn't we? And I remember at one point taking off my heels. As prepared as Hitchcock was, he didn't say, now, even once you get started, you take off those heels. Well, sure enough, I finally took off those heels after I broke a heel on one of the shoes.
Yeah, but you're climbing in your heels for part of it.
I know, for a lot of it, yeah. And Cary Grant was older, and I thought, well, if he can do it, I can do it. But he, no, someone pointed out at one point I was really ahead of him. I was pulling him, or at least I was ahead.
There's a the scene where you've kind of fallen off a ledge of the monument, and you're dangling off the edge of the monument. The only thing you have to hold on to is Cary Grant's hand, mm-hmm. but he's losing his grip, and you're in danger of just falling and falling. What was beneath you at that time, the mattresses?
Yes, and something to I was just, you know, we won't tell everybody, but just a few feet off a box or something. But at one point, I actually did slip further than I was supposed to, because the man who was supposed to catch me was looking the other way. So I slipped about 3 feet more than I should, and I still have a tiny scar on my left elbow. And if you notice in the movie, I actually rubbed my elbow. And I decided, the actor's studio, I'm going to... It hurts. It really hurts. I don't want to stop filming. I don't want to yell cut. The actor never does that. And I just used it. And there I am in the scene, really rubbing my elbow, which hurt a good deal.
My guest is Eva Marie Saint. She stars in the new TV movie, Papa's Angels. It will be shown Sunday night on CBS. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Eva Marie Saint, the star of such films as On the Waterfront, North by Northwest, All Fall Down, and Exodus. You were born in Newark and I think grew up in upstate New York?
I grew up in Albany, New York.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And what did your parents do for a living when you were young?
My mother had been a school teacher in Vineland, New Jersey. She'd been a one-room school teacher. And my dad was with B.F. Goodrich Tire and Rubber Company. So no one in our business, in our family, had ever been in the business. My sister was a research chemist for DuPont. And I was studying to be a teacher and then changed my major in college and went into the theater.
What was your early exposure to acting?
It was in Bowling Green State University, where someone dared me to try out for a play, and I did. And there was just something enlightening about that whole experience, working with other actors. I'd done some practice teaching. I was really going to be a teacher, like my mom. But there was something exciting about it, and then I went into did another play, and then one summer, my sophomore year, I wrote to my drama professor and said, I'm thinking of changing from education to liberal arts, and what do you think would be the possibilities for me? And he wrote me a beautiful letter about the possibilities in New York at the time. Live television, radio, the theater was flourishing. And he knew my background, and he said, the main thing is to be able to take rejection. I have a feeling you can. And it was a beautiful letter that I felt was encouraging, because that's what I wanted to do. I might have read it differently if I really wanted to teach. And then I went to my parents and told them, and they said, whatever you want to do, honey, just do your best, which was what they always said to my sister and myself. And they were wonderful about it. I probably wouldn't be talking to you, Terry, if they had said, what are you talking about? Get a job. Get a job with a salary check every week, for God's sake. But they didn't. And so I'll be forever grateful.
Well, you know, you were told that what you needed to do was, you know, be able to take rejection. Were you able to take that?
Yes. And it happened. It's kind of a long story. I'll try to make it short. But when I was in Mr. Roberts, that was the first play I ever tried out for, got the role, the only woman in the whole show. And I actually replaced somebody else who was too tough. I got the role. We were out of town. Josh Logan, the director, came to me after a few performances out of town and said, Eva Marie, we think we have a hit. We're a little nervous with you because this is your first show. So we would like to keep you as understudy to Jocelyn Brando, who was Marlon's sister. It all gets very incestuous, doesn't it? But I did say, Mr. Logan, I'll take the understudy. And I went down in my dressing room and cried my eyes out. And everybody came in one by one. Eva Marie, may we come in? And they came in one by one, including Hank Fonda, saying, you know, it's a godsend that you're taking this at such a young age, because we've all had rejection. But the fact that you're very young, it'll mean something, and nothing will be this worse. So thank, well, wasn't very comforting to me. But that night on the subway between, I was living with my parents at the time in Jackson Heights, and I was thinking, I never want to feel this way again. I never want to be so destroyed. I came from a loving family. No one had ever rejected me in this way. So by the time I get home, I'm going to decide whether I want to stay in this business and or be a teacher. And if I stay in the business, if I make the decision, I'll never, ever allow myself to feel this way again. By the time I got home, I decided I was going to try to continue acting, studying, and whatever happened, wherever I was rejected, when and where, I would never feel this way again. And the feeling this way again meant from my neck down, my heart, my soul, from my neck up, okay, you're disappointed, you're upset from your neck up, but never, never, your soul would never be crushed again, or your heart. And it never has been, I have to say, in all honesty. So those guys were right in Mr. Roberts. So that was a big lesson, big, big, important lesson in my life.
Eva Marie Saint, she stars in the new TV movie Papa's Angels. It will be shown Sunday night on CBS.